the TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. From climate change to energy and environmental matters, you're listening to Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Joining you now for the expanded two hours of Unleashed with Mark Morano. All right. Well, we all know what happened last week in the United States. Joe Biden gave his big State of the Union address to the nation. And anyone who's watched, and let me just give you a little history here. I've always been a State of the Union junkie, regardless of who was president. I love the pomp, the circumstance, the ceremony involved. I worked on Capitol Hill for many years, both inside the Senate and also not as a senator, of course, but as a senior staffer and also as a journalist covering the Congress and the Senate. So, I mean, for many years, and I would say from the early 90s through 2011 or so, it was my ritual to go down to the event. I would either have press credentials or I would have staff credentials. I would go to the event, go through all the security, go through the hall, try to listen. I couldn't actually get in the chamber. I never actually heard one inside the chamber, but I would always go cover it. And I can honestly say that over these three decades of watching these speeches, I've never seen one this much like not just a campaign speech, which it was. I mean, there's always elements of that. I'm not going to be like, oh, this was unprecedented in terms of that. But in terms of just the darkness, the meanness, the nastiness, the absurdity, and the in terms of just turning it into these one-liners and campaign events, it was a really sad event to think that this is the State of the Union. And of course, right before it began, the White House announced that they were trying to do a speech that was going to get rid of, quote, the old man vibe, unquote, for Joe Biden. And yeah, there's definitely been, that's a great phrase, old man vibe, because you get that every time you see Biden and every time he's on camera. So there's a lot of speculation, unprovable to the hilt, that Joe Biden, first of all, he obviously got rid of the old man vibe, at least for that night, because all of his critics, Republican critics, conservative critics, we're all commenting that they think someone injected him with something to wake him up. So if you're Joe Biden and you want to get rid of the old man vibe and everyone's accusing you of hopping yourself up on some kind of uppers or some kind of a drug to make you wired, then, hey, you did a pretty good job. Whether you took the drug or not, or whether it was natural or whether you just mentally prepared. Either way, he was definitely keyed up. But it was just, it was a sad speech, ultimately. And it went well over an hour, started 20 minutes late. It was just a huge spectacle. I must confess, I did not watch it all live. I went to bed. I couldn't do it. I did watch all it with my son, the bated breath as he came out and greeting people. I love the fact that George Santos was there. The Republicans are absolute idiots for getting rid of him. I have no reason that I like him or anything. It's just the idea that there's a corrupt politician who lied in Washington. Let's get rid of him. And then they, of course, lost a seat. To me, he embodies everything that is Washington. He should be just left alone. And the voters can decide in 2 years whether they wanted to keep him in after all his exposed lies. Can't understand why they felt a need to do that, especially from New York. He immediately lost the seat when they got rid of him. They lost the seat. Anyway. Okay, just to give you a little flavor of what happened, this is clip one, Joe Biden threatening the Supreme Court. I think 8 of the 9 members were sitting there right in front of him, just basically saying, you aren't going to have much longer. Like, if I get reelected, I'm replacing you. One key pointer, it's not just saying, oh, the next time one of you die or retire, I get to replace you. There's a implied, very obvious implication here of packing the court, expanding the numbers from 9 Supreme Court justices to 15 or beyond, modeled after Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who did that in the 1930s to get his Great Society's Lyndon Johnson, the New Deal of Lyndon Johnson. in the 1930s. Joe Biden has been threatening to pack the courts. In fact, when he ran it last time, he said, well, you ought to elect me to see what happens. But anyway, here's just a clip of Joe Biden threatening the United States Supreme Court. Clip one.
And with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you've brought about.
So this is about abortion. It's about appealing to the feminist vote and everything else, and going for the pro-choice, pro-abortion vote. And it was, again, it was full of just sort of partisan screeds like this, where one half would cheer. It did sadden me a little to see the new Republican House Speaker nodding along on, like, about Ukraine funding and other things like that. I just, you know, I don't know. I'm not very excited about the man who replaced Kevin McCarthy. And I got to tell you something else. I wasn't that excited after watching, and I watched this multiple times. I even watched the Saturday Night Live side by side spoof that someone, I think it was the Saturday Night Live spoof of this. But this is the Senator Kate Britt's Republican response to Biden. A lot of good there in the speech. She is actually, she's good looking. She's articulate. She laid it all out. The problem was, I just think it was ill-advised. She ended up using an example of child rape and prostitution that was, I believe, from the George W. Bush administration, with a direct implication that it was during Biden administration. Anyway, I'm not really that much of a partisan when it comes to this stuff, so I'm not going to be like, rah, rah, Republicans, I will speak no ill. No, I will speak ill. I'm not saying it was horrendous, but it was just, Saturday Night Live captured an essence of creepiness that was there. And what I mean is, she's in this kitchen, she's talking about it being her home, and she's talking, and then she sort of gets a little smile, and then she sort of launches off into this about a whole story about child prostitution from an illegal immigrant and at the border. Anyway, this gives you a flavor. This, I don't believe, is that part, but this is about a 50-second clip. This is clip four, Senator Katie Britt's Republican response to Biden. Let's take a look.
Our families are hurting. Our country can do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it. President Biden inherited the most secure border of all time. But minutes after taking office, he suspended all deportations, he halted construction of the border wall, and he announced a plan to give amnesty to millions. We know that President Biden didn't just create this border crisis. He invited it with 94 executive actions in his first 100 days.
Those are pretty powerful points, pretty well delivered, a little, I don't know, emotional. But again, that could be man-woman difference. I don't know. You know, just could be my preference. I don't like the word executive action because it sounds like I'm a man of action. It's an executive order, executive dictate. It's bypassing democracy. And that's what Republicans need to get that through. And it's not, that was done under Obama. We're doing executive actions. He's a man of action. No, he's a man of dictatorship. So they should call them executive orders at the very least, executive diktats or dictates otherwise. Anyway. And then from there, she went into this other speech. So I don't know. We'll see. She's certainly infamous and famous after this Republican response. I'm not sure. Here's a response I thought was much better. I hope it's not just, you know, the delivery, but the content. This is clip five. This is Colonel Douglas McGregor, his State of the Union response. He's the CEO now. And I just thought his speech was fantastic. Also, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which I will play you tomorrow's show. I thought he gave a great summary of the State of the Union. I don't know if Donald Trump did one. If he did, I missed it. And I will go back and look for that as well for tomorrow's show. But anyway, clip five, Douglas McGregor's State of the Union response to Joe Biden, or his own address if he were president.
The question before us is, where does America go from here? Consider the following actions that should be taken as soon as possible. First, we must secure our borders, our airports and harbors. Defending the United States and the American people must be our top priority in national defense. Second, unless the United States itself is attacked, we must avoid unnecessary conflict. Prosperity at home demands peace abroad. U.S. national security must not be hostage to foreign interests or their domestic agents inside the United States. Third, we must restore the rule of law inside our country. We must remove activist judges who fail to uphold the Constitution and who release violent criminals and illegals into our country.
Wow, very good, very powerfully delivered. Just so you know, he's Colonel Douglas McGregor, combat veteran, former senior advisor to Secretary of Defense under President Trump, and chief executive officer of our, as chief executive officer of the country. So he worked in the Trump administration. I think, and I don't know enough about his background, he might be a good VP pick, vice president pick for Donald Trump. That's a heavyweight choice, and he's an America firster. He sounds exactly like Howard Phillips, who I used to work for, who had a group called the Conservative Caucus. I think it's just by the New Hampshire accent. But, you know, there's a lot of good choices, a lot of good spokesmen out there. RFK gave a great one as well. This is Gutfeld talking about Lake and Riley and how about Joe Biden's botching of her and his lack of respect for her. Clip six, Gutfeld from Fox News.
It's scummy. There are worse words for it. But, you know, Joe spoke the truth for once.
Yep.
Technically, they're not supposed to be there. He just admitted guilt. This is kind of a big deal. The killer wasn't supposed to be here. Why can't the family sue the government? You want to end this? Sue the bastards. The government failed their basic job. This has to be the next step. Families of victims of criminals that are streaming in here have to sue the government. The Democrats are suing their political opponents for, you know, return the favor. Return the favor. This one's real. This one's real. It's time to sue the people responsible for all of this misery.
And that's really what we need to be looking at. I mean, if you think about it, there's so much protection of the evildoers, whether you're even talking about big pharmaceutical, you can't sue for adverse vaccine reactions. And of course, these are mandated vaccines by the government that don't even work and that the pharmaceuticals admit they didn't do. You can't sue for these kind of things that happened to Lake and Riley. Also at the State of the Union, Gold Star Dad was arrested. Here's clip seven. Take a look at this.
All Americans deserve the freedom to be safe. And America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then.
And he's saying they're United States Marines, and you know, just Lily interrupted. He was arrested. They can't handle all of Joe Biden's claims about immigration, for one thing, and what the illegals are doing. I mean, they've literally rolled out the red carpet from day one, as Senator Katie Britt's Republican response laid out very well. This is, make no mistake about it, Joe Biden has allowed this, created it, encouraged it, and I don't think they thought it was going to be this bad, and now they're trying to do damage control. Well, here's Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, Democrat. Flashback to 2009, talking about illegal aliens should not be treated the same as those who came into the United States legally. And the question is simple, what's changed since 2009? But here's how the Democrats used to talk on immigration, clip eight.
People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally. Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong.
That was only 15 years ago. That's how far the world has come to literally welcome mats. I think it was the old talk show host Michael Savage used to say, language, border, and culture, border, language, culture. And it really does matter. You don't have a country without a border. And I know people like Ann Coulter are out there upset at Donald Trump for not building more of the wall and angry. But it really truly was, as Senator Katie Britt said in the GOP response, one of the most secure borders. You can argue, well, that's not saying much, but it still was. I mean, Donald Trump had the border under tight wrap compared to the Obama administration, to the Biden, and probably the George W. Bush administration. And I think if he comes back, he's not going to. The only thing I would caution, if Donald Trump wins re-election, which I hope he does, I hope that he doesn't use executive orders or do wartime powers, because there was hints of that last time, and he maybe even tried it. I don't want to see that kind of thing done. I just because I don't like the abuse of emergency power. We've got to get a Congress. We've got to get proper funding. We got to do it an old-fashioned way. We got to do it. And also, I would say that the Texas governor, Abbott, needs to step up and actually use the state, a National Guard of Texas, secure Texas's border, and do everything possible. He's been trying to do that lately, but he's been overall pretty weak over the last few years when it comes to that. Okay. I wanted to do this. This is Biden, a summary of his 2024 reelection pitch. And it has to do with vaccinating America. Clip two.
Folks, we have come through pretty tough times, and I know we got a lot more to do. We had to stay off. We had to start off by vaccinating America. Trump stood flat-footed during that period of time before the pandemic.
So that's not going to go away there. And that's what I always say to people, like, oh, well, it's over now. COVID's over. No, they could reimpose all of this overnight once again. All they got to do is gin up the fear. And at least 50% of the population in the U.S. will go along with it. And they're going to be forcing, there's nothing to stop the vaccine mandates. Again, the judge stopped it. The court stopped it for federal employees, but it was stopped sort of on a technicality, not on the whole concept of it. So one last clip, those of you to bolster people who think Joe Biden got injections before his speech. Again, it was a teleprompter scripted speech. It's not the same as like an impromptu press conference or a debate or anything else. But anyway, clip three, this is Joe Biden and examples of him failing basic cognitive tests.
Look, here's the deal.
Let me say this simply and clearly.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing. You know how we talk about it. Are we the people? Folks,
we got to... It's just, yeah. But you gotta, I mean, we gotta reassure, look, my message to everybody I talk to is
play the radio, make sure the television, excuse me, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone, make sure the kids hear words.
I got a lot of, I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight, and then watch the hair come back up again. They look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. You know, there's a, during World War II, you know, where Roosevelt came up with a thing was totally different than the World War II. He had the War Production Board.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
$1.2 billion in overtime was denied for hourly workers who were not unionized. $1.2 billion. So you go ahead and you stack spaghetti sauce at a store in a supermarket. You control the guy or the woman who brings out the carts on a forklift. What happens? They make you management.
Well, that's the President of the United States. I think it was ESPN analyst Stephen A. Smith who actually said it's not about whether Biden is even functional during one speech that's rehearsed or cue cards. It's whether he can do 4 years. And he's already, you can go back and watch interviews with him in the 70s. He ain't that impressive. You can watch interviews with him in the 80s. He's not impressive at all. So we're dealing with a marginal intellect that's been zapped by age and illness and time to something that, you know, again, this is the perfect candidate for the regime, for the great reset, because he's just a blundering old man who doesn't really know what's going on. And you have the staff in control, a lot of stuff that people who, but President Obama is still in charge. But anyway, neither here nor there. We'll have more on State of the Union later. This is Now. We're going to take a break. Unleashed with Mark Marano. When we come back, Darren Baxter, director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute Center for Energy and Environment. And we're going to talk all things Biden administration, some of the things he talked about in the State of the Union. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned on TNT.
TNT's Chris Smith.
I can tell you that Donald Trump is projected to win primaries in the states of Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, Maine, Massachusetts, Arkansas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And in a little bit of a turn up, the northeastern state of Vermont looks to have gone to his rival, his final rival, the former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley's team has said that she won't be speaking tonight. That has been construed by many of the reporters in that location as she's about to exit the race in the next 24 hours.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Marano on TNT. All right. Joining us now on the program is Darren Baxter, Director for the Center for Energy and Environment, Senior Fellow, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is one of the greatest think tanks in Washington, D.C. I followed their work for decades. Welcome to the program, Darren.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right. Great. Why don't we just start, first of all, with what is Competitive Enterprise Institute and what is your job and what exactly is your message and what is your organization trying to do on energy and the environment?
Competitive Enterprise Institute is a think tank here in D.C. We're celebrating our 40th year anniversary. Actually, just now. It is all about producing the scope of the administrative state, about freedom, individual liberty. And for me personally, I'm the director of the Center for Energy and Environment. And that's making sure that we unleash American energy. It's ensuring, once again, freedom, pushing back against the EPA and the bureaucracies that try to restrict the way we live. And really kind of the big mission, again, is about pushing back against unelected bureaucrats and ensuring that Congress does their job and passes the laws, not people that we never elect.
Wow. Well, how, you know, in terms of where we are in Washington, we had the Obama administration came in with all the EPA enforcement, the massive growth of the administrative state when it comes. And then, of course, Trump came in, generally reversed everything. And then, of course, Biden came in and reversed everything back. From your experience in Washington, from the Competitive Enterprise, what happens when you have a sort of yin-yang of regulatory policy like that in Washington with such extreme swings between administrations?
Oh, it's a nightmare for property owners that are trying to comply with the law, figure out what's going on, for businesses that are actually trying to figure out how to invest. You know, they don't have any predictability. But really, the victims, especially on the energy and environmental front, is the American people. And because if the businesses or like the energy producers won't invest because they don't have a predictable environment, then you're not going to get as much production, not as much supply of energy resources. Prices go up, hurts all Americans, and especially hurts low-income Americans who spend a greater share of their income on energy and basic needs than other Americans.
Well, I guess one of the phrases they use, the phrase regulatory certainty. I guess under the Biden administration, you could pretty much say there's a lot of regulatory certainty. You're pretty certain they're screwed, right? American industry is going to be screwed. So tell us a little about what Biden did from day one in office as it relates to climate energy policy. That was one of the biggest things he campaigned on, jailing fossil fuel executives. And on day one, he started going after American energy. Detail how that's gone. What did he try to do? What did he do? And what impact has that had?
Yeah, first of all, I agree with you. There is regulatory certainty. So I guess you could compliment him on that. It is basically, everything he talked about doing, he's doing pretty much that and worse, which means blocking oil and gas lease sales, trying to put an end to fossil fuels, moving people away from gas-powered vehicles into EVs. Or I don't really know that they really care if we drive EVs. They just don't want us driving gas-powered vehicles. So if we want it walking places, that's fine with them. Basically trying to do things that I think are just, if 10 years ago, if I said the federal government is going to try to basically ban or try to ban the gas-powered vehicle, people would say I'm insane. But, here we are. Insanity is here in D.C. It probably always has been, but it's really insane now. And the Biden administration is taking a lot of the extreme things the Obama administration did and taking it to a new level. And it's scary. They really do want to get rid of fossil fuels. Imagine getting rid of fossil fuels, which account for 80% of our energy needs. Just imagine a world without fossil fuels, how much it's going to hurt Americans and people all over the world. There's no consideration of the costs, the trade-offs, and how it's going to hurt Americans at all. It's just they want to achieve a very extreme ideological agenda, and that's what they're doing.
Well, this has gone way beyond, administration. It seems as though they've captured institutions. Like you mentioned EV. Let's break that down. There was a meeting, Nicholas Stern, the World Bank, former president of the World Bank, at a World Bank meeting, though, this is like 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, said that they're flirted with the idea of cutting off funding to automakers to make gas-powered cars. You have a major corporate bank in Australia said they won't give out car loans to people who buy gas-powered cars. You have a total bypassing of democracy with the gas-powered car ban. In other words, it starts with someone like Gavin Newsom, who does an executive order. Then the California Air Resources Board implements it. Then 18 states trigger laws. And then the Biden EPA starts coming in with corporate average fuel economy standards. And they have all these mandates against the automakers. So you see what I'm saying? No one actually voted for this. Yet it's happening through a combination of corporate government collusion, bypassing a democracy. You said it couldn't happen 10 years ago. My question is, what's changed in the last 10 years that they're able to actually do this now? I mean, do you think it's a legacy of COVID where we just sort of gave up our democracy in many ways after the lockdowns, or is there something else at work here?
I think we've given up our democracy, unfortunately, a while ago. And the EV stuff, I don't know, maybe it could have been done 10 years ago, but I think just more momentum. I'm not even sure. And we see a lot of pushback on things like the gas stove bans, but we're not seeing as much pushback on gas-powered vehicles, maybe because it hasn't kicked in quite yet, so people aren't seeing the effect. But one of the biggest things that we work on here at CEI, Competitive Enterprise Institute, is this concern that you're talking about, the unelected bureaucrat making decisions for us. We need to restore representative government in the United States. We elect congresspeople who then oftentimes just pass off decisions to unelected bureaucrats. Or sometimes, and many times, like when you think about the EPA and the Clean Power Plan under the Obama administration, Congress passes a law, like the Clean Air Act, and then the agency goes completely beyond what the agency ever envisioned. And then It's like, what is Congress going to do? They're not doing much. They're not pushing back. They're not holding these agencies accountable. And when I say restore representative government, I'm not trying to, it's not so much I care about the well-being of members of Congress. I care about the American voter, because they're the ones that are getting hurt by it, because they're not having people representing them in DC on these major policy decisions. And it took the Supreme Court, in a case called West Virginia versus EPA, to basically strike down the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. But it shouldn't have to come down to the court to protect us all the time. Congress needs to take action and reassert its power and stop allowing bureaucrats and extremists like the Biden administration to make these decisions that are basically trampling on our freedoms.
Well, which brings up a question, you know, and feel free to attack, bash Republicans. But were under the leadership of Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy in the House, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, were they pushing back during the Obama administration? Well, I don't know if Kevin McCarthy was there during Obama, but were they pushing back during the Biden administration enough? I mean, on any of these issues, whether it's agricultural restrictions, EV, energy restrictions, were they? What was the Republican response to this in Congress?
You know, depends on what period of time we're talking about. I would say from 2016, 2018, you had kind of all things aligned, right, for the Republicans. Right. And no, there was not enough pushback. And unfortunately, the system's messed up enough so that, you know, one way to provide checks on government agencies is through the appropriations process. That's one way. But we just saw a bunch of spending bills get passed that have no real kind of ways to control the administrative state in these agencies. So once again, the agencies just do whatever they want. So the system is unfortunately messed up, and Congress is not reasserting its power. That's something that needs to be done. It's a process issue that needs to change here in DC. And there are some decent regulatory reform ideas out there, and that's what we need to focus on. And yes, there's plenty of things that Republicans can be criticized for. And certainly not doing enough to push back is one of them.
Well, I remember during Obama administration, his climate bill failed. It passed the House after Nancy Pelosi arm twisting, failed like the first vote, passed in the second. And then it never was even put for a vote in the Senate. And this was a huge revelation because the Democrats had like almost a supermajority at the time. I think it was 9 Democrats, including Al Franken, signed a letter saying they wouldn't support it. It was at this time that the Obama administration decided what I called the Chinification of America. They just went executive order happy, and they just started doing things like you mentioned through the EPA. They didn't need no stinking Congress. In other words, we don't need no stinking badge. That's what they did. So the question is, how do you fight this administrative state, this bureaucracy, these executive orders? And I think now, unfortunately, Republicans are sort of forced in some ways to try to do. I was just referring to Donald Trump. I was hoping he doesn't do stuff at the border if he gets reelected. I don't want him to do similar stuff like declare an emergency at the border, get emergency powers. We don't want Biden doing it on climate. I don't want Trump doing it on immigration like that. Even if it is an emergency, it's just there's too much use of abuse there. Anyway, that's my opinion. But the question is, how do you actually reform that?
Well, I'm glad you brought up that one point about, you know, not abusing it. If Trump is in office, don't abuse it. Well, you know, just an example, unfortunately, the Trump administration did abuse a program at the Department of Agriculture to provide a bunch of trade aid to farmers because of the retaliatory tariffs that are, you know, the whole trade war that existed. And it basically was a slush on the USDA. And at the time, you know, I was critical of those programs, and some of us were, not many, of the Trump administration pushing back. And one of the reasons why is because the argument would be, well, down the line, guess what? A future administration, like the Biden administration, to use that money as a slush fund for climate programs. Well, guess what? That's exactly what's happening now. Mm-hmm. The Biden administration is taking this money that is really just very discretionary spending billions of dollars on climate change to try to force or influence, nudge, whatever you want to call it, farmers into engaging in what's called climate smart agricultural practices.
Yeah.
So one point I think is really important is that while the regulatory state out of control, no question about it, and it's kind of my passion, my big issue and concern, is something else has come up. And that is the fact that I think on the left, And in the climate change debate, there's a recognition that sometimes you can't always get what you want in the regulatory state. So what you can do is, because Congress doesn't seem to care about spending at all, is we'll just spend a lot of money. And we got the Inflation Reduction Act a year and a half ago. And basically spend all this money, create all of these subsidies, get a lot of dependency, and you get like these allies, certain businesses potentially, that ultimately will get on your side. And then sure enough, you'll have kind of, you'll achieve some of your climate objectives, not through the regulation necessarily, but through spending. And also, again, you trying to incentivize people from not driving gas-powered vehicles, from shifting from reliable source of energy to unreliable source of energy, and it's just going to hurt all of us.
Wow. Again, it's just, you're exactly right. Inflation Reduction Act, let me ask you about that. I think it was, I don't remember the exact number. It was around $300 billion, maybe a two something. It was passed. But I just saw a report about 3 weeks ago saying the Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden administration somehow, and I don't even know, I worked on Capitol Hill, I'm not even sure how they do this, is now spending more money than Congress authorized, and they're on pace to spend like $1 trillion. In other words, they passed it, and I guess all these mandates and subsidies are going to, the subsidies, the spending goes in almost perpetuity, or at least decades into advance. How does Congress pass a bill, and then the administration implementing it just end up doubling, tripling the budget without more congressional authorization? Is this a new world we live in? I don't understand even the accounting tricks you have to go through.
Yeah, so the green, I put in quotes, scare quotes. The green spending is about $369 billion. That's what it's supposed to be, right around there.
Yes.
But the problem is that the spending, it just depends. And, you know, there was a projection by an accounting firm, I don't want to mess up which firm it was, it estimated it would be, the cost would actually be around $1.2 trillion. And that's what we're probably going to see. It might even wind up being worse. And then as you know, I would expect it to be worse than that. That's how it happens. And unfortunately, there's no appetite for trying to rein in spending. But, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act is a concern regarding spending, certainly. But the bigger concern is the fact that they're using the money and the power of government to try to dictate kind of how we live, try to influence the way we generate electricity. They're trying to restrict freedoms through the spending and incentivizing all kinds of different actions by private actors that we wouldn't necessarily want them to engage in, like wasting money on EVs when they should actually want to be building cars that people want, like gas-powered vehicles. There's a fund, there's something called the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, which is basically a $27 billion slush fund for the EPA. And the money, there's two programs of about, actually, there's one program that's $14 billion of that $27 billion that the EPA has kind of created. And they're going to give out that $14 billion to two nonprofits. Those two nonprofits are then going to divvy up the money. Now, we don't know what, so you have a slush fund for the EPA that then becomes a slush fund for two nonprofit organizations that then figure out how they're going to spend billions and billions of dollars. Talk about unelected. Bad enough you have unelected bureaucrats, then you have unelected nonprofits that are just spending money for whatever, pretty much for whatever reason they want, connected to climate change.
Wow.
It's scary.
I mean,
scary stuff.
Yeah.
It's sad, honestly.
It is. When you have when you have Trump running now for re-election, what happens if he wins and comes in and just takes wholesale chainsaw to this? What happens to the auto industry? What happens to agriculture? What happens to American industry? You know, everyone from the ceiling fan industry, I understand they now want to regulate the ceiling fans for Energy Star. And there's a few American suppliers left. All they're going to do is drive it to China. But if you're a private, if you're a corporation or a business, what do you do when another administration comes in and at least temporarily starts undoing stuff? I mean, do you just go with it, or do you still plan on, well, the history of the administrative state, as you call it, is that the administrative state ultimately wins most of the time. I mean, it's going to win, then there's usually like a revolution or some kind of giant collapse of it. But in the short term, even with a Trump administration reelected, it's probably it's not going to affect the long-term trajectory of the administrative state. At least that's my pessimistic view. So my question is, what do these businesses end up doing? What effect does that have? And if you're a business owner, how do you handle that kind of just reversal?
Yeah, I think those great points. I think one thing will be dependent on what, can they do something on the Inflation Reduction Act? I think if they could do something legislatively, that would help. I think that would create some more predictability. Right? So I think it's really important. I've hammered this, is that we cannot forget that the Inflation Reduction Act is something that needs to be dismantled right away if there's a new administration. Dismantled completely. At least, and I'm talking about the energy and environmental stuff. I don't want to get in my outside my lane, but for the most part, yeah, even in those other areas, dismantled. The concern practically is that as you get all these subsidies and some Republicans get some money in their districts, you get concerned that maybe they're not going to have as much pushback against the IRA. I hope that's not the case. But let's just say something positive happens and there's a better political makeup, let's say, and they can push back against the IRA. That will help with predictability. And since that is legislative, that can help a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, so on the regulatory side, it's, it will continue to have, predictability problems.
Wow. Well, just back to the IRA for a second. We had Senator Joe Manchin, who refused to support it originally. In fact, climate activist, I think it was Bill McKibben, said that there's a whole geologic era of the earth will be named the Manchin because he refused to support a pork barrel spending bill. Well, it turns out, I think Bill Gates gave him a visit, made some promises for businesses and development in West Virginia, and the Democrat leadership made a bunch of promises to Joe Manchin. Was Joe Manchin, his deal, did he get a good deal? And has anyone fulfilled that end of the deal, the promises they made to him to support that Inflation Reduction Act?
No, he didn't. It was obviously disappointing what he did. And it's kind of sad and amusing watching him kind of complain about how the administration is implementing the Inflation Reduction Act. Because it's kind of like, what did you expect? Exactly. Why did you support this bill? What did you think was going to happen? They're doing exactly what we would have told you they're going to do. And they're acting in contrary to what even he thought was going to happen. Let me give you one example. If there is a subsidy for carbon capture and storage that he's supportive of. And the idea is to try to help the coal industry and other industries to try to, with carbon capture. The problem is that subsidy is being used by the EPA to justify technological requirements for power plants that they can't possibly meet. So the subsidies in the IRA, which are meant to be kind of a carrot to incentivize the use of the carbon capture and storage, are actually being used by an agency to use the stick, the regulation. That wasn't the goal. Senator Manchin and the other senators, many of them, that wanted to provide the subsidy, which I'm not saying is a great idea, but to use a subsidy to help coal. Actually, that subsidy is being used to kill coal. And that's something that Senator Manchin should address.
Wow. Yeah. I also understand there was some Bill Gates thing where Bill Gates made some promises and that, to essentially, tried to bribe him. And apparently that may have worked. But okay, we have to take a break. We're talking with Darren Baxt, the head of the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute Center for Energy and Environment. I want to ask you about carbon capture, planting trees, all these wonderful things that there's an entire caucus of Republicans in the House that are promoting this. Will that save the planet? I'll ask you. We'll also talk a little bit. We'll talk a little bit coming back about the LNG, the liquefied natural gas, and some of the recent stuff coming up and how you hope this election goes. So we'll be right back. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
Being a parent, especially for the first time, with that comes a lot of self-doubt. As a dad, I just try to lead by example. When you're trying to be the best person that you can be, your kids see that and then they emulate that.
Fearless, informative, and unfettered, Mark Morano is unleashed on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT. I'm your host, Mark Morano. All right, we're continuing our discussion with Darren Bax, director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Energy and Environment. All right, and I'm not trying to get you in trouble, Darren, here, but there's a whole Republican caucus, the Climate Solutions Caucus, I think is the exact name. And they're all about, I was in the UN summit in Egypt last fall. A whole series of Republicans show up at every UN conference. And their message isn't like, oh, the UN's message is wrong or their science is corrupted, it's bad. It's kind of like, yeah, we agree with you, but maybe you guys go a little too far. We want to do carbon capture. We want to plant trees to save the planet. First of all, does the planet need saving? And second of all, do planting trees, a trillion trees, and or carbon capture, is that going to save the planet if it's in fact needing saving?
Well, let me make it clear that the UN and the recent conference that they had, the COP28 climate conference, yeah, they're wrong. They're wrong about the way they're trying to address if the climate change, to whatever extent you think there is. It's just a conference. I call it a conference on penance. It's basically all about sacrificing. It's a bunch of elitists meeting over wherever they're going to meet, the change every year, and trying to sacrifice on behalf of all the people that they allegedly think they represent, which means they want to give up fossil fuels. And that was part of the discussion in Dubai. They want to try to shift away from meat consumption. John Kerry was talking about that there should be no more coal-fired power plants ever permitted anywhere else in the world. I'm sorry, that hurts not only freedom, but when you don't have fossil fuels, which again, as I said, produce now for 80% of energy, not just America's energy needs, but just the world energy needs, we're not going to have energy. Energy is basically what's required for life. So when you sacrifice all that, you're basically punishing everybody all over the world, actually, for just being able to live in a modern society. If we're going to actually improve our quality of life, which is something that apparently they don't want us to do, then we're not going to be able to do the things that they want. And for most people, they want to improve their standard of living. They want a better life. They want a better future. And if climate change is a concern, even if you buy that, the one way you're not going to solve that problem, climate change, is if you're a poor country that's going backwards and is about against development. What we want is innovation and economic growth and flourishing. And that will help humanity and to address any possible concerns, whatever it might be, in the future. And I think there's an underlying theme, kind of the same kind of mindset that exists before in the past when it came to like population growth, et cetera. It's just an anti-human mentality and a belief that humans are not clever enough, or they have no ingenuity, like we're not going to adapt. Well, we are going to adapt, and we come up with new solutions and find new ways to produce food and energy. So as population growth goes up, we still manage to produce even more food. We're not starving. We actually produce more food. We're actually, now the complaint is that we produce too much food. So it's just outdated, provenly wrong, incorrect thinking that guides those conferences. So So no, for those folks going over there, in any way saying that they agree with them, that's unfortunate that they'd say that.
What about planting trees and carbon capture? Is that the way out of the climate crisis? I mean, because you'll hear that from everyone, even all sides. The conservative Pierre Poilievre running against Trudeau in Canada, his climate agenda is, yes, I don't deny climate change. That's why I want to capture carbon and plant trees. I mean, that's what this is sort of catching on. It's been in Europe for years where the so-called, you know, anti-regulatory state conservatives embrace, you know, the climate narrative, climate crisis narrative. But what do you make of that? Is that the way out of regulatory control, is to plant trees and capture carbon?
You know, one of the problems of being believing in freedom and being conservative or libertarian or whatever it might be, just being believing in freedom and markets and humans, is that, like, when you say you want to get rid of our program, the response is, for even sometimes people allegedly conservative, is, well, what should we replace it with? The answer is nothing. Just believe in the fact that people through free markets and free exchange of goods will come up with solutions. So planting trees is not going to solve some issue. If there's an issue to be solved, it's going to come from humans, through ingenuity, through free markets, through free enterprise, and through just freedom generally. That's what's going to solve any types of issues. It's not going to be through planting trees. In fact, if the United States didn't exist and you didn't have any greenhouse gas emissions at all, by 2100, that would have an impact of 0.2 degrees Celsius. It would have that type of impact, that minor of an impact. And that's if no emissions. And that's based on a Heritage Foundation model, which is a clone of an EIA, Energy Information Administration model. So it's very, you know, when I say conservative, it's basically assuming kind of like bad conditions and just taking the government's own model and showing that even if you did all these radical policies, you're not going to have any meaningful benefit, but you are going to have meaningful cost to Americans and people all over the world. So planting trees, enough of like virtue signaling. Let's actually just believe in the fact that in economic growth and freedom, and that is the best way to live today. It's also the best way to live tomorrow as well.
All right. One of the things Biden just recently did was block liquefied natural gas exports from the U.S. to other countries, particularly Europe, which he had promised them help, you know, because of the Russian sanctions. He was going to help them, but they didn't do it because he basically gave in to the environmentalist base. Why is that important to have liquefied natural gas exports in the U.S.? Some people would say, hey, we need that gas here. Why are we exporting it? Let's keep it here in America. What's the story behind that ban?
First of all, hoarding never results in good outcomes. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how many times you can show that in history, that, you know, if you look at like starvation and whatever, it's usually dealing with hoarding in the world. So hoarding is not going to help. We produce more than enough LNG. We can actually walk and chew gum at the same time. We can produce more than enough LNG here and export it to our allies. We can keep prices down. Eventually, prices will start going up through these types of actions. I don't know why, you know, well, I guess I do know why. It's just politics, why they have the LNG pause on the exports. But it's worse than that. The Biden administration over the last year, I mean, even before, but especially over the last year, has the issue of their offshore drilling plan, which is restricting kind of exploration and the ability to kind of get oil and gas. They've restricted all kinds of oil and gas lease sales in Alaska and all over the country. And every time they do that, Interior, like, they release these press releases and they boast about the fact that they're restricting this. I don't know why restricting energy and driving up the prices for Americans at a time when it's already things are really high is something to be boasting about. It's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, they truly do. I guess it depends on which audience. Well, then the other thing you'll hear, and I hear this every time I make a comment on Twitter or somewhere else, you always hear that we've had record production of oil and gas in the U.S. Everyone who says Biden's restricting energy is lying. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been hit with that on social media. What's your response to that? You know, we're at record production in the U.S., so Biden hasn't restricted squat. A lot of liberals criticize Biden for that. So what's the response?
The oil and gas industry doesn't work. It's not like it's a 1 week and now you got oil and gas.
Yeah.
You know, it's based on the Trump administration opening things up. They plan things there is probably more production. But the problem is there would be a lot more production. The Biden administration didn't do what they're doing. And then moving forward, what's going to happen is these records are not going to be records for very long. And because they're setting the tone, the oil and gas industry has to plan accordingly. There's a little bit of a time lag. So Biden administration doesn't get credit for that. I think the Trump administration deserves credit for that, as well as Congress, to the extent that they helped to unleash American energy. Biden administration everything to not unleash American energy.
Thank you. All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much. That was Darren Bax, Director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute Center for Energy and Environment. Thanks so much for joining us today, Darren.
Thank you so much.
All right, and this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned for the second hour coming up.